new subject to discussion. I can't hear myself at all. Hold on here. There we go. New equipment at the studios of LVRocks.com, and we welcome you to Subject to Discussion live in LVRocks.com every Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific Time, 8 o'clock Central if you're in Chicago or anywhere in the Midwest, or 9 o'clock if you're in New York or anywhere in the East Coast. You know, somebody email me, what if I'm in Boston? It's the same time in Boston as it is in New York City, so... once again, it's heard every Wednesday live on LVRocks.com. And the website for the program is subject2discussion.com. Email address is subject2discussion@LVRocks.com. Thank you to Spankwagon. I can't talk today at all. Spankwagon.net for archiving the program. Spankwagon's heard every Friday from 6 o'clock Pacific Time until 8 p.m. Pacific Time here on LVRocks.com. And tonight, I will be bringing on in a few minutes David Starobin. I have to ask him how he pronounces his last name exactly. He's the editor of GlobalPolitician.com, which is a global world news site with a lot of international news that the mainstream press has not been covering, and has not been covering usually because of the aftermath of Katrina and everything else that's been going on in the news, which bothers me. We got 24-hour news channels. We got three of them, and none of them can cover more than one topic at a time, which is ridiculous. You got things going on across the world, and they got cover either. Now it's been Katrina for 2 weeks, and now it's all of a sudden Katrina and Robert's confirmation. They can't take cover more. You got 24 hours. Squeeze a few more news items in, please. And then in the second hour, we're expecting a call-in from Richard Hatch. Not the Survivor guy, but Richard Hatch, the actor from Battlestar Galactica. He's going to be calling in with to interview him about what's going on with him and his role and his career. He's got quite the career, my God. I was going over all his roles, and Richard Hatch has been in pretty much every significant television series since the 70s. He was in The Waltons. He was on, what else was he on? He was on Cannon. He was on Jake and the Fat Man, Hotel. He was made an appearance on Baywatch. Pretty much every significant series, in the last, 20, 30 years, he's been on it in one role or another. The Love Boat, he was in The Love Boat. Magruder and Loud, remember that one? He was in Dynasty. He was in an appearance on T.J. Hooker with Shatner and Heather Locklear. Murder, She Wrote, Fantasy Island, Chips. So, you look at it, he's been in every significant series in the last 30 years. So, it'll be good to hear from him. And anyway, I want to start off the news, too. And everything, and next week's the one-year anniversary of Subject to Discussion. I've been trying to land a high-profile guest for the program, but... everybody in email, no. Dan Quayle said no. Some of the programming on LV Rocks is, he objects to some of the programming. I'm like, for crying out loud. And then we had, I asked Tom Tancredo, and so he's yet to respond to me about being on, so hopefully he will and come on to the program. And, who else? And we had, I asked Governor Richardson if he'd come on to the program from New Mexico, and they said no. His title's, his schedule's too tight, and he can't make it on the program. I mean, for crying out loud, I'm not doing brain surgery here. This is a radio show. It happens to be on the internet. I don't know if it's still because the lack of respect for internet radio or what, but I think it's just as BS. They should come on and speak their piece. Let me interview them. I'm not Dan Rather sitting here. I could do a damn good interview if I want to. And so, Internet, we'll see what I can come up with next week. But I have landed a huge guest from Battlestar Galactica for next week. I'm not going to reveal who it is. You have to tune in next week. It's an enormous guest from Battlestar Galactica, probably the biggest star on Battlestar Galactica. So you have to tune in next week to see who that is next week. So, and also, we're going to give you a little tour of the LV Rock Studios. It'll be all of 3 minutes, I think. But anyway, so I'll start the news to you before we bring on David Starobin from GlobalPolitician.com. And I want to start off first with the breaking news that I think CNN broke in with it. Britney Spears is a mother. Britney Spears has helped husband Kevin Federline multiply and replenish the earth yet again. Baby One More Time singer gave birth to a baby boy Wednesday afternoon in Los Angeles. The child is Britney Spears' first and Federline's third, of course. He didn't see fit to marry the mother of his other two children, of course. But he has two young children from a previous relationship with actress Shar Jackson. According to Sky News, UK Sky News, Spears was considering naming her and Federline's child London after the British capital where the romance blossomed. So that's wonderful. It's always good to know that we'll have a Britney Spears offspring parading around the earth. So congratulations to the lovely couple. And then we had Delta Airlines and Northwest file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. This is from today. Delta Airlines and Northwest Airlines filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection on Wednesday, according to court documents. Delta Airlines, the number three U.S. airline, which earlier this year said it did not have enough cash to meet its liquidity needs in 2005, filed for protection. I mean, these airlines are all going broke. Only one that's somewhat solvent is American Airlines, I mean, which is ridiculous. I mean, it's jet fuel is crazy. The chief executive officer said that Delta is open for business as usual, will continue normal operations throughout the reorganization process. And then Minnesota-based Northwest, whose mechanics have been on strike since August 20th, filed for Chapter 11 protection as well. So I don't know if we need to, the government can't come in and take over these airlines. I mean, there's got to be something they can do for these airlines. I don't know if it's give them a tax break for the jet fuel or what. But, I mean, these airlines are just dying, and most of them attribute to the jet fuel. Here it is. Delta's woes were compounded by a crushing debt load of more than $20 billion. And one of the country's biggest underfunded pension burdens. So I expect the people who have pensions through Delta to lose a portion of their pensions once they go Chapter 11. So this is ridiculous. United Airlines and U.S. Air are both already operating in bankruptcy, though both are expected to emerge soon. So, I don't know. These airlines are a mess. And, I got my questions. Richard Hatch here mixed in here with my news. I want to read them now. I'll save them for when he comes on. Hopefully, because Richard Hatch says he's filming scenes up there in Vancouver. He'll call from the set from his cell phone, so hopefully that'll come off. This is from Wednesday, from today. Doctor pleads guilty to negligent homicide and patient death. This is from last Wednesday, excuse me, from Montana's news station KTVQ in Billings. A former doctor charged with murdering an elderly patient by giving her a lethal mix of drugs pleaded guilty to a reduced charge of negligent homicide. James Bischoff of Ennis pleaded guilty in district court in Boulder. Bischoff has said the medication he gave the woman was meant to ease her suffering. However, prosecutors said the drugs hastened her death. So he gave her a toxic cocktail full of drugs, and it hastened her death, euthanasia or Jack the Dripper used to do. And this is from Shadow from the UK. Alert: as explosives are handed over, a County Durham police station and a leisure center were evacuated for a man brought in a bag of explosives. The man went to a Pederley police station, handed over the plastic bag containing five tubes, saying they were explosives used in the mining industry. And the police, including people in the police station, including people in custody and a leisure center, were evacuated on Friday evening, and an exclusion zone set around the bag. Oh, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that happens all the time. We get these bags. You know, we had something in at the hotel the other day. Somebody left the bag in the lobby, and security surrounded. What was in there? Underwear and socks. It was a bag. And this is also from last Wednesday. Drunk woman dies in cemetery accident. it's not funny, but it is, you know what I mean? An inebriated, no kidding, Belgian woman died in a freak accident when she ended up beneath a heavy gravestone at a cemetery, local news agency said. On Wednesday, the 33-year-old was on her way home from a bar. How'd she get from the bar to the cemetery? In a Belgian town in early hours of Saturday when she took a shortcut through the cemetery. She urgently needed to relieve herself and crouched down between two tombstones. And as she lost her balance, she grabbed one of the stones, which gave way and landed on top of her. There she is. She's trying to take a shortcut through the cemetery. She needed to go to the bathroom, so she crouched down between two tombstones. She grabbed one of them, and one of them fell on her and crushed her to death. Amazing. They said that she died of suffocation. No kidding. Was unable to lift the heavy stone off of her. That'd be embarrassing. DNA evidence traps spitter. Britain's much abused and derided traffic wardens have a new weapon in their struggle with irate car drivers. DNA evidence. British car parking firm NCP, blah, blah, blah. They issued a DNA spit kit to its staff after a man who spat at a traffic warden pleaded guilty to assault when the saliva was identified. So now they got DNA to track who's spitting on these police officers over in London. So good for them. This next one is from Thursday. Baby in stroller stabbed on New York Street. A knife-wielding man stabbed a 10-month-old baby in her stroller, critically injuring her, police said. Isabel Avens was rushed to a hospital where she underwent surgery Wednesday night. She was listed in critical but stable condition, the police said. The nanny was walking with the baby around 5 p.m. when the man approached them a short distance from the girl's home. He just came out of nowhere, witness Hennessy Arias told the New York Post in Thursday's editions. The baby was hysterical, crying. She was crying and trying to gag for air. Jesus, crazy. The man, Bernard Deere, 48, a man with a history of psychiatric problems, was taken into custody a short time after the attack, no kidding, and held an attempt to murder and other charges. Man, I don't know. That's what I say. I think we need to go some kind of triannual mental health exam for everybody in the country, because these nuts are out there running loose and need some kind of a chemical imbalance, or something's wrong with these people, and we need to get a hold of this, because we can't keep having these nuts doing these crazy things, you know? Rwandan arrests Belgian priest over genocide. Here's another one. Rwandan authorities arrested a guy, a member of the Catholic Order of the White Fathers, in the transit area of an airport on Tuesday in Rwanda. Rwanda's national prosecutor told Reuters that the member of the Catholic Order of the White Fathers is accused of publishing articles in a newspaper that incited Rwandan Hutus to commit acts of genocide. Amazing. Amazing. Disgusting. You know, these priests are supposed to be preaching the word of God, not urging genocide among the citizens of the country that they're in. I mean, that's ridiculous. Here we are here. Lead copper found in elementary school's water. This is from WGAL Channel 8 in North Anvil, Pennsylvania. There's something in the water at a Lebanon County Elementary School, and it's not good. Students and faculty members and staff at the North Anvil Elementary School will be getting their water from coolers after high levels of lead and copper were found in the school's water fountains. What the hell? There's no word on when the problem will be fixed. Well, hopefully it is fixed. I mean, it's ridiculous. Horrible. You know, this groundwater. I mean, yeah, they got to fix this garbage. I mean, these kids shouldn't be drinking all this copper and lead. I guess it's one way to get your minerals, but, you know, that's another story. Fake Viagra gang busted. Chinese police Thursday hailed the bust of a Sino-U.S. piracy ring making fake Viagra, but denied using arrests of Americans or other foreign nationals to publicize the fight against piracy, which the United States says China is losing. So we got a fake Viagra gang in China. Chinese media last year ran wide coverage of the ministry's arrest of two United States citizens for also pirating DVDs and all this stuff. So now they're trumping out that it's not just the Chinese that are doing this. It's, you know, they got some Americans over there as well doing the same thing. The people who were arrested, one American and 11 Chinese arrested as recently as last week on charges of producing 440,000 pills of fake Viagra and Cialis. This next one is ice cream man allegedly shows porn to children. 36-year-old cell phone searched by sheriff's deputies. A ice cream truck driver is accused of offering free ice cream to children in a Macomb Township neighborhood in exchange for obscene photographs. Michael Wesley Kane, 36, of Detroit, was arraigned on two counts of accosting children for immoral purposes, a four-year felony, and two counts of exhibiting obscenity. I can't talk to you at all. And two counts of exhibiting obscenity to children, a 90-day misdemeanor, according to the Macomb County Sheriff's Department. Disgusting. Apparently, this guy, ice cream truck driver, was showing pornographic photographs to young children. The driver allegedly showed new photographs of himself on his cell phone to children and asked the girls to kiss each other so he could photograph them, the sheriff's deputy department said. Pervert. Sick pervert. Passengers restrain duct tape unruly man on flight. This is from Denver. Some passengers on a recent Frontier Airlines flight carrying hurricane evacuees, get a little of this, from Houston, were in no mood for an unruly passenger. On that Tuesday night, this guy named Jason allegedly walked up to a flight attendant in the center aisle and tried to make an announcement. When the flight attendant tried to get him to sit down, he allegedly pushed and slapped her, saying, "I'm a man," according to the arrest affidavit. As another passenger stepped in, beating the man before tying him up with duct tape. And by the way, where did they get the duct tape from? I thought all that stuff you couldn't bring on the planes anymore. So they arrested him. The police met the plane in Denver. They arrested a man. They noticed blood down the center of the aisle for several rolls and pooling of blood near the back of the plane where he'd been tied up. So they must have beat the hell out of him. Anyway, and then this next one is from the police arrest daughter and mother's death. This is from KLAS, Channel 8 in Las Vegas. Police have arrested a woman for the alleged murder of her elderly mother. Police say the older woman was suffocated. The crime took place in apartments near Sahara and I-15, which is not too far from the garden spot of Las Vegas where we're at right now. Police say it appears that the daughter, Janet Rogers, broke into her mother's apartment through a window. Another daughter who was staying in the apartment ran to get help. Janet Rogers was arrested a few hours later at a nearby fast food restaurant. She is now facing murder charges and booked in the Clark County Detention Center. What the hell? Suffocator. I mean, as I said, mental health exams, need mental health exams in this country. And this is from actually ties into 9/11. 9/11 recovery loans loosely managed. This is how they gave money to a firm to hand out money to recover from 9/11. Businesses who said they were suffering after 9/11, they gave money to make up for the lost business. Let's see here. The government promised banks a hands-off approach in overseeing nearly $5 billion in September 11th recovery aid to small businesses. What it got in return was numerous loans to companies that didn't need terror relief or even know that they were getting it, the Associated Press found. Had we known it was 9/11 money, we would not have borrowed it. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. This guy said, John Adams, a vice president of Brankle Brokerage and Leasing in Marion, Indiana. What's he doing getting money from 9/11? It happened in New York. Who didn't know until informed by the Associated Press that his company's $1.3 million loan had been drawn by his bank from a program created by Congress to help economic victims of the 2001 terror attacks. Horrible. This guy's company was a loan. The Dunkin' Donuts shops and florists to motorcycle dealers and chiropractors and businesses nationwide said they were unaware that their banks had lent them money from the low-interest government-guaranteed September 11th loan program. Yikes. Let's see. The AP got this from the Associated Press from the Freedom of Information Act. There are many loan cases. I mean, there's a South Dakota country radio station got money, a Virgin Islands perfume shop, and a Utah dog boutique. Let's see what else. Some of this money is just ridiculous. Let me get to this here. This radio station, KBFS, Hit Kicking Country in South Dakota, borrowed $135,000 from the SBA's disaster program after learning about it from a news release. He said the station was forced to pay more money to cover national news and also lost advertisers. And they got this other one. Margie Olson, co-owner of the some kind of winery in Oregon, said her business needed a $125,000 loan because it couldn't sell high-end wine to restaurants that closed in New York City. We'll just sell it to somebody else, you know what I mean? And then we get a co-owner of Little Dog's Resort and Salon in Salt Lake City. She got $50,000, and she said that she got that money because people stopped taking vacations and boarding their pets after September 11th. And then we had this other one from the Virgin Islands. This lady owns Violet's Boutique. Said she owns Violet's Boutique. It's a perfume shop. She lost 60% of his business as tourism stops. She got $169,000 only. Crazy. That's why we need somebody to oversee this reconstruction of New Orleans, too. I suggest that they have Colin Powell or Schwarzkopf, somebody like that, to oversee this money, where it's getting spent, and who's getting these contracts and all that. We need accountability because these billions of dollars have flown into New Orleans, and in Mississippi and those other countries and other countries, states, and we need accountability. So I was Bush to put Powell in charge of that or Schwarzkopf, somebody like that. It's got credibility who lay down the law to these people. This next one is from Vancouver, Canada, from British Columbia. Postcard takes 50 years to arrive. Oh, that's all right. Yeah, it's parcel post, I guess. Peter Simons noticed something odd about a postcard received in the mail from Florida. It had a 4-cent stamp on it. The postmark was November 7th, 1955. Hey, I show an aerial view of the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami Beach, which is a wonderful hotel. Actually, the So the guy who was running Mandalay Bay, he's left that to go work for a company called Fountain Blue Resorts. It's owned by Turnberry, because Turnberry owns timeshares here in Las Vegas, and they just bought the Fountain Blue Hotel in Florida, and they're going to build a replica of that hotel on the strip over there by where either Wet n Wild is sitting, or over by where the El Rancho Hotel, which was torn down. That's going to build a replica of the Fountain Blue called Fountain Blue Resorts. So that's where we're going to put that there. And so, I mean, it's a 50-year postcard. You know, well, postage due, probably. Couple plead guilty in Wendy's finger case. This is from that dip over in here in Vegas who dropped that finger into the chili at Wendy's. Nevada couple plead guilty Friday to all charges relating to planting a human finger in a bowl of Wendy's chili in a scheme to extort money from the fast food restaurant chain. This woman and her boyfriend plead guilty to conspiring the following false claim and attempted grand theft in a scheme that Wendy's claim lost $2.5 million because of that. So they see, how'd they figure it out now? They found out who? I don't know. I can't remember. Do you remember? No? How'd they resolve this case? How'd they figure out it wasn't whose finger it was, you know?
Oh,
I think it was my finger.
It was something like the like the husband of the lady.
Oh, that's
like
right.
Someone they worked with.
Yeah.
Or something.
The finger fell off or something.
Got it cut off, and yeah. So they took it in, put it in the chili, and tried to sue him.
Yeah, and this woman also pleaded guilty to defrauding a woman by selling a motorhome she didn't own. And then this guy who was arrested with her was pleaded guilty for failing to pay child support. Oh, these two are just, you know, classic citizens of the year for Las Vegas, I think. You know what I mean? Andy Griffith. Can you whistle his name? No. Andy Griffith to donate collection to University of North Carolina. Andy Griffith will donate manuscripts, television, and film footage and other memorabilia documenting his 55-year career to his alma mater, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He's proud of his connections to Carolina, and please know that some results of his blah, blah, blah. He's best known for his roles, Andy Taylor from Andy Griffith. Yeah, so he's going to donate all this stuff to the University of North Carolina, Andy Griffith, probably museum or something. I wonder if he's going to give him his Christmas songs, too. I don't know. This is a Menendez Brothers update. Menendez Brothers' convictions upheld. Remember those 2 days they killed their parents and all that? A federal appeals panel today upheld the convictions of Lyle and Eric Menendez, who are serving life sentences for the shotgun murders of their parents at their family's Beverly Hills home 16 years ago. You can't believe those two expected to get out. Eric, who was 21 at the time of the murders, and Lyle, then 18, alleged the parents, Jose Menendez and his former beauty queen wife, Kitty, had abused them. So they convicted them. The victims were shot at close range. They sat in their den watching TV and eating ice cream. They want some nuts on that ice cream. They said they were formed for self-defense because their sons believed they were going to die at the hand of their parents. Yeah. Illusionist Horn walks into Vegas Theater. This is a Roy Horn update. Illusionist Roy Horn made a slow, unassisted stroll into a Las Vegas theater, taking another step in his recovery from a near-fatal tiger mauling 23 years ago. Yes. What? I'm not maybe no chimp. I don't even know chimp, so don't worry. Kona Gross, I'm going to interview some monkey. Now, I got enough monkeys. Never mind. I could go off. I'm not.
Got a couple extra monkeys here in the studio tonight.
Yeah, a couple apes right here. What are you talking about? No offense. You got apes. You got a bunch of animals over at the wrestling school, too. You might as well interview them or interview anybody. Anyway, a couple jackasses over there. How about that? There you go. Roy Horn, there we go, I lost my place. Roy Horn methodically walked about 100 yards into the Thursday evening performance of Avenue Q at the Wynn Las Vegas Resort. Avenue Q is considered an adult version of Sesame Street, apparently. Horn has been walking without the aid of a rolling walker for 6 months now. He's made public appearances in several months, blah, 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 so that's good, he's starting to get around a little bit. So it's good for him. You know, he's got the money to recover from that, so he's got the money, you can recover from anything, I guess. Katrina Good Samaritan, victim of cruel prank. A local woman from Van Nuys, California, who orchestrated a massive relief shipment to Katrina survivors, may be a victim of a cruel prank. Horrible. Her grassroots effort this week solicited donations for Katrina victims over the internet. The response was huge, with hundreds of pallets of stacked with canned food, bottled water, and medical supplies. But two men who promised 11 trucks to ship the goods never showed up. Fortunately, more truck drivers have offered their services, and three truckloads of supplies are now on their way. That's disgusting. This poor woman, you know, all her time and effort to, you know, get stuff together for the Katrina victims, and these idiots, you know, don't come through with the promise of trucks to move the stuff. Horrible. Car salesman stabbed to death. Was that a lemon he bought or what? I don't know. Authorities today held a 35-year-old man who allegedly stabbed a car salesman to death with a butcher knife after his request to take his test drive in a Corvette was turned down at a Cerritos auto dealership. The man was booked at the Los Angeles County Inmate Reception Center in suspicion of first-degree murder. He's being held on $1 million bail. Supposedly the suspect walked into the S&J Corvette. The guy couldn't produce a ID acceptable to the dealership. It was denied access to the Corvette. He was acting violently and pulled out a butcher knife and attacked the salesman, stabbing him several times in the upper body. Horrible. And then the guy was pronounced dead at the upon arrival at the hospital. Disgusting. I don't know. Two men charged in overdose death. Two Williams County men are facing felony charges in the death of a Southern Illinois woman whose body was found in a Snyder Hill cemetery. What's up with these cemeteries? Who's sending me all these stories with the cemeteries? Carbondale police say maintenance workers found 37-year-old woman. The toxicology test indicated she died of a drug overdose. The police detectives contend the drugs she used were provided by two men. They're both charged with drug-induced homicide and concealment of a homicidal death and obstruction of justice. Investigators say they believe the woman overdosed at a Marion home, and the brothers drove her by to the cemetery to make it look like she overdosed there at the cemetery. Eek. Woman charged in Clayton. This is an awful one. Awful. This is from Kansas City, Missouri. I thought it was a nice, peaceful community over there. Woman charged in Clay County rape case. Clay County prosecutors charged a 21-year-old woman Thursday in connection with a rape of a mentally disabled woman in March. The woman, Tommy S. Kennedy, is charged with forcible rape. According to county court documents, the 22-year-old victim told police that she was at a house when Kennedy, a man, pushed her into a bedroom, took her clothes off, and forced her to have sex. Eek. And she admitted she had held and pulled this young lady's legs apart, the Clay County prosecutor said. Oh, my God. The woman said they allegedly told detectives she helped with the rape because she was afraid the man would hurt her. She did not cooperate with them. Oh, man, that's disgusting. Disgusting. This one's from Saturday. Kansas City couple posing as a... What are these bad stories? Any good stories in here? Good news? Kansas City couple posing as evacuees charged. Police arrested two people who were allegedly panhandling door-to-door near a church that was taking evacuees from Hurricane Katrina. The couple posed as victims of the storm, but a suspicious driver called police. One homeowner said that the couple had a bag of groceries when they requested and got a donation from him. The two are identified. They're both 41 years old from Kansas City. They are scum, said one resident. People like that are unbelievable. How can you get that low to act like they're victims and they're not? The man approached this one woman, said he just arrived from Louisiana, he had gas money. A woman gave him $10, waived some with a carload of other people. I mean, horrible. Horrible. I see on the news there, right? They have all these websites, these fake websites up there that are, taking donations and stuff. Those are for Katrina, and they're not. They're going to somebody's pocket and stuff like that. So, I mean,
yeah,
it's
PayPal's
disgusting.
PayPal's trying to crack down on them by doing everything.
Really. And... I mean, Katrina may cost as much as two wars. One storm could end up costing as much as two wars. An analyst inside and outside county agreed that the $82 billion that Washington has spent so far was merely the first installment of perhaps an unparalleled sum. I cannot put a cost figure on it, said Cheney Thursday in a visit to the hard-hit states. Where has he been anyway? It took him until like last week to show up. I mean, you know, Count Dracula finally came out of his tomb, I guess. I don't know. And the governor has never dealt with a disaster of this scale. 90,000 square miles of Gulf Coast was affected. The devastation is expected to cost about $300 billion in the next 4 years. This could climb to $200 billion in the coming weeks. The Powell County could approach more than $300 billion spent in 4 years of fight in Afghanistan and Iraq. Horrible, horrible. And, well, I think our guest is there, right? And I think we're bringing David on from Global Politician. Oh, we got this new equipment here. David, you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
How are you? There you go. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, there you go. Can you hear me well, sir?
Yes, I can.
There you go. And how do you pronounce your last name? I'm sorry.
You actually got it. It's Storben.
Storben. Oh, very good. Very good. Now, tell those who aren't familiar a little bit about your site. I mean, it's a wonderful site. Can you tell everybody out there a little bit about it?
Well, we provide news from basically around the world. We have people in about 25 nations. We have about 75 writers. About 20 of them contribute regularly. The rest provide us with articles every month or so.
Mm-hmm.
We have about 8 to 10 articles daily. Some of them are published, some of them we keep for later publishing. We deal with every subject imaginable, from Nigeria to New Zealand, from Chile to England, just about anything you can imagine anywhere in the world. And a lot of our news is not covered by a lot of the mainstream press, such as CNN. Part of the reason for it is that it is very specialized kind of news. It is something that if you're talking about news from, let's say, Nepal, maybe some people will be interested in it, but not everyone. And we want to cover the polls that are left by CNN and Fox News and MSNBC and so on.
Yeah. Well, I've said before, I found amazing how these 24-hour news channels can seem to only cover one or two stories at a time, and they have 24 hours of a day to cover news, and it's only one or two stories. I mean, have you found that just mind-boggling?
Well, that's basically why we've organized the website, because if you turn on CNN, that's all you get. You get Katrina, 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 and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that, you had one story all day, every day. And for 2 weeks, you get nothing but one story. And with that, you do get a range of news.
Yeah. Now, how long have you been blogging? Oh, it's not really a blog. It's a site, right?
Yeah, it is a site. It's a web journal. We don't...
Oh, hello? Hello? What happened?
It looks like we got cut off.
Oh, no.
He'll call back.
Oh, hope so. Oh, man. I hate when that happens. So, that being said, I got more news. We'll go through... Let's get my stuff together. I only had a few things left. I hope he calls back. And those things happen. And is he back on? No? No. Anyway, David Storben, if you're out there, please call back. We will get you back online as soon as possible. Senate okays restrictions on cold medicines. Sales of over-the-counter cold remedies used to make methamphetamine would be restricted under a measure approved by the Senate on Friday. The bill will require stores to sell Sudafed, NyQuil, and other medicines only from behind the pharmacy counter. Oh, not only that, can I have those condoms, but also give me my NyQuil back there, too. I mean, that's ridiculous. Those medicines contain the ingredient, an ingredient called pseudoephrine. There we go. Hopefully he's back online. What's going on here? David Storben, are you back, sir?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I'm sorry for the disconnect there. I don't know what happened. We got new equipment, so if it's our fault, I apologize. Now, Global Politics, how long have you been doing your site?
For about a year now.
Wow.
A little less than a year.
It's a wonderful site. I'm on it right now. I mean, it's just incredible. Now, during this Katrina mess, what's been the reaction internationally to Katrina?
Well, the one thing that surprised me is the lack of reaction from the rest of the world, the lack of help, the lack of aid that the United States has received.
Hmm.
Anytime something happens outside of the United States, you see the United States give hundreds of millions of dollars. You see a lot of nations get together and send people and send aid and send food, clothes, and everything else. And I have not seen the same reaction to the Katrina disaster. I have not seen anyone or almost anyone offer to provide any kind of meaningful aid. Several nations have offered a little bit, but not enough, definitely not enough. If you think back to the disasters outside of the United States, whenever the United States did not provide hundreds of millions of dollars,
mm-hmm.
plus people, plus food and medicine, everyone was outraged. Even mm-hmm. if the United States did something, everyone was still outraged that it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at the reaction of the world to Katrina disaster, nobody responded. Nobody helped the United States. There has been nothing. There has been no reaction.
Well, yeah. Well, I think it's the perception is the United States. Well, it is. It's the wealthiest country in the face of the earth, but actually, it's the country in the most debt in the world. But I mean, that's another story. But I mean, it's true. I mean, a lot of these countries haven't really. The UK hasn't offered anything. Canada's offered, some bacon. I think that's about all they've offered. But I mean, the reaction's been really.
Yeah, the Belgian waffles, maybe from Belgium.
Yeah. Whoops. Sorry, we've got things going off here in the studio, left and right. And now what's going on right now? I mean, we had the UN conference over there in New York today. Anything big come out of that?
Well, several things actually. You have the foreign minister of Indonesia meeting for basically the first time publicly with the foreign minister of Israel. Indonesia being the largest, the most populous Islamic nation in the world. Israel obviously being at war with several Muslim states, obviously not with Indonesia, but Indonesia did keep the same boycott of Israel that much of the rest of the world has, at least publicly. In private, they have met, they have had ties. They've actually, Indonesians actually have bought military from Israel. Military equipment from Israel, but it has not happened publicly. This is the first time that it happened, and so you do see some movements on in the Middle East towards maybe potentially arriving at a settlement. I know that people have said that before, but now it's different just because the Syria fought out of the picture and just because the Israeli right wingers have been neutralized by Sharon, who was their leader, and he basically has, in their view, betrayed them by giving up the Gaza Strip, and now by willing to give up more. Probably, he's probably willing to give up most of the West Bank. So that may lead to some kind of intervention between potentially all of the Islamic states and Israel, or almost all of the Islamic states and Israel. Another issue is that there may be some movement on Iran in terms of the three powers, England, Germany, and France, potentially passing resolution, supporting a resolution against Iran, at least the IAEA resolution, to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons. And the third issue that may arise would be in regards to Zimbabwe, where there are many, many nations of the world that are very upset as to what is going on there, because you have anywhere from 1 to 2 million people being displaced just because they happen to have voted against the governing regime of Robert Mugabe. So that's the third thing that may potentially happen. Whether all three of these will happen is unlikely, but it is highly likely that at least one of this will happen.
Yeah, now, how's Bolton going over in the U.N.?
I mean, there wasn't much fire over Bolton. There wasn't as much fire as people expected. People in the U.N. realized that George Bush supports him.
Mm-hmm.
People realized that if he didn't speak into George Bush's ear, he wouldn't have been there.
Mm-hmm.
Much of the Democratic Party, or almost all of the Democratic Party, is against him. So because he's there shows that the White House administration has a lot of support for him. And everyone knows that George Bush is going to be in power another, 3 years?
Yes.
So they do not really want to upset the President of the United States, needlessly. And similarly, Bolton does not want to be the attack dog of the United Nations. He does have to cooperate with people. It's one thing when you are not in the United Nations, when you have to say, oh, look, I don't like you. It's another when you actually have to deal with these people, when you have to arrive at settlements with these people, when you have to push through resolutions. At that point, you have to say, well, look, let's bury the hatchet, and I'm not going to call your names, I'm going to compromise. It is a completely different situation for him now.
Now, talk about Iran for a minute there. Now, the Iranian elections and the Iranian president's visit to the United States. Now, we have news about that.
Well, a lot of the Iranian opposition, and I've spoken to some of them who are based in the United States, a lot of them are opposed to him coming here. But the United States doesn't really have a choice but to accept him based on the UN charter, based on the agreements into which the United States entered at the time when it agreed to host the United Nations in New York. So they did have to let him in. Having said that, several of the other people around him have not been let into the United States. In addition, there have been several administration officials who have said that he is a terrorist, or who have made statements that are very much against the new president, who is a very hardcore conservative. And when I use the word conservative, I don't mean it in the American sense. He is a conservative in the Islamic sense, and that he is very much against the United States, against any arrangement with Europe, against any arrangement in terms of the nuclear weapons, and against any arrangement with Israel. He is quite openly a supporter of terrorism against Israel, which he doesn't call it terrorism, but that's basically what it is. And he does support nuclear weapons being built by Iran, which I guess everyone in the government does support, but he is somebody who's probably very unlikely to compromise.
Now, Iran, the people in Iran, how they view the United States right now?
Iran is one of those nations where that is the opposite of most of the rest of the world. Whereas in most nations, like Saudi Arabia, for example, the government tends to play nice with the United States, but the people hate the United States. In Iran, it's the complete opposite. Most of the people, not everyone obviously, but most of the people have a fairly positive view of the United States. Most of the people are not as radical as the government. There were some people who actually have claimed that Iran has fewer religious people than the United States. Whether that's true or not is hard to tell, just because people have to at least pretend to be religious or fundamentalist, not even religious, but fundamentalist. So the Iranian people do not hate Americans, but they do want to get nuclear weapons. They want to get them in part because they want to show, oh, look, we are a superpower. You have to deal with us as a superpower. We are on par with Great Britain or with France, China, Russia, and the United States. Much the same reason that was used by, let's say, India and Pakistan, which are unlikely to use the weapons. And Iranian people would not want to use them, probably, but they do want to get them. Having said that, the government is not the most stable government there is, and I would not trust them not to use the nuclear weapons that they are trying to build.
Wow. Now, what about Iraq? Now, Zarqawi is establishing the so-called Islamic Republic of, was it Qayyim in Iraq?
Yeah, Qayyim is a city not far from the border of Syria. There have been some reports that this is a hoax, that that's basically the view of the United States government, that Qayyim is not it's just a hoax. Somebody put up a sign saying, welcome to the Islamic Republic of Qayyim, and people from Pravda, which is a Russian newspaper, and from the Washington Post actually believe it. Others claim that the United States just does not want to admit to having lost the city. The loss is probably temporary, even if it has happened, and I do believe that they are in charge of at least part of the city. The people coming to Iraq from Syria are coming through the city of Qayyim. So if there's going to be one place where the militants are going to be able to take over the city, that would be the city.
Now, what about Syria? The United States is threatening to attack Syria. What were your views about that?
Well, I believe that that's just a threat. I don't believe that the United States is actually willing to get involved in the war against Syria. It may well be that the United States could potentially strike a couple places in Syria, but not an all-out war. That is just, I cannot imagine that happening. The United States is too tied up in Iraq, and to expand the war, there would just not be any support either from the military or from the people or from the Congress. So it's very, very unlikely. If anything, if the United States does have to get involved in a war against someone, it would probably have to be Iran, which is a much greater threat than Syria. Syria is basically a very, very weak nation. They would not be able to threaten anyone without the help of Iran. So this is basically just a threat. That's it.
Now, what about Iraq, the war in Iraq? How's that playing internationally? Is it viewed as our media here kind of views it as, you know, Bush's approval ratings down to 39%, a lot of that's attributed to the war? I mean, how's the war playing over, you know, across the globe?
Well, as you probably know, most people who live around the world are against it. If you look at Europe, very few people at this point support it anymore. Even if you look at England, at the Conservative Party in England, the people who are trying to win leadership, who are trying to take over the Conservative Party, even they are claiming they are against the war. So there isn't much support for it. Having said that, in the one nation where there is a lot of support for the war in Iraq is Iraq itself, even though it doesn't look that way. It's not as if everyone supports it, or maybe not even the majority, but at least half the people, especially in the north and the Kurdish areas, probably in the Shia areas, they do support the war. It is not as bad as it seems, because most of the fighting is in just the Sunni areas, and in the rest, it is fairly quiet. I was just speaking with a European diplomat whose nation is not part of the coalition, and every time he would speak to someone, people would want to know whether his nation is part of the coalition, and if he said that it was, they would be much friendlier to him than if he said that it wasn't, especially in the Kurdish areas. The Kurds are very much pro-American. There are some places where the war in Iraq is fairly popular, maybe Australia, but obviously most of the world is against it.
Yeah. Now, about Israel. Now, Israel withdrew from Gaza, and then they had the whole thing with the murder of Arafat's, was it a cousin, I believe it was? And then,
it was his cousin's son.
Yes. Now, how's that going? I mean, they pulled out of Gaza. They're pulling out of some areas in the West Bank. I mean, is that a good thing, or how's that being viewed?
The whole world supports it. Everyone, including 70% of Israelis, support Israel withdrawing from Gaza. Gaza has more than 1 million Arabs, and it had about 8,500 Jews. And it is the size of it is roughly the size of Washington, D.C. So Israel was not going to be able to settle it with Jews and take over. The only thing that it would do is increase the number of Arabs within Israel's control. And Israel does not want to get to a situation where the number of Arabs under it is greater than the number of Jews, because then you have a situation similar to, let's say, South Africa, where blacks were a majority and whites were dominating the government. And Israel does not want that situation, because that situation is, as we saw with South Africa, that situation cannot last. So Israel is trying to withdraw from as many of the Arab cities and as many of the Arab regions as possible. It has not done so in the past because it was afraid to do so, in part because of Yasser Arafat, in part because of other Arab states. Mm. Now with Yasser Arafat being dead and with Iraq being neutralized, and Egypt has signed a peace treaty with Israel about 25 years ago, Jordan signed a peace treaty with Israel in 1994, so Israel has been trying to get rid of most of the West Bank and all of Gaza. Mm. It was not successful in Camp David because Yasser Arafat was not willing to accept anything short of Israel, short of Israel's demise, because he wanted Israel to be flooded with 5 million Arabs, establishing an Arab majority within the pre-67 Israel. At this point, Israel is basically pushing that the offer that it made in Camp David together with the United States, where Israel would withdraw from about 90% of West Bank and all of Gaza, and from the Arab neighborhoods in Jerusalem, and in return, Israel would keep the large settlements. Hmm. Whether that's good or bad, it just depends on how you look at it. It's good from the point of view of Israel not having to rule over the Palestinians anymore, which is good for both Israelis and Palestinians. It's also good from the point of view of Israelis because they will no longer be threatened by an Arab majority. Mm. The bad news is that Gaza is likely to be a terror haven now, and terrorism against Israel is likely to increase as opposed to decrease as a result of the withdrawal.
Horrible.
The strategic decision by Israel was that it's better to suffer from terrorism, which is a danger, but it's not a... it's not going to destroy Israel. Then to get to a point where Israel, like South Africa, will have a Jewish majority, a Jewish minority.
Now, what about Benjamin Netanyahu? Now he resigned from his position in the government to run against Sharon. Now, how's he viewed over there in Israel? Is he viewed as a dedicated politician, or because he was prime minister before?
He was a prime minister before, mm-hmm. and he did not do a particularly great job in the mind of most Israelis. That's why he was voted out after a very short period of time. He did a very good job as a finance minister under Sharon. Mm. And his popularity was rising. And then he figured, well, if I withdraw now, if I step down from my position, I will be able to run against Sharon and I will beat him. Mm. The problem with that is that most people realize that he would also withdraw from Gaza. And most people realize that the only reason he is doing this is because he wants to become prime minister, which is not good enough. Which you should have a reason. You should want to do something as opposed to just having pure personal ambition.
Mm-hmm.
He may well win the Likud primaries just because Sharon is now very unpopular. He is viewed by the right-wingers as a traitor, as somebody who betrayed Israel and Likud. But Sharon can establish a centrist party, and that centrist party would likely be the largest one in Israel because he's very popular. He, in the mind of most Israelis, he has done a solid job.
Hmm.
As far as Netanyahu, he may become the leader of Likud, but I don't see him becoming the prime minister of Israel so long as Sharon is active in politics.
Well, no, Sharon's had problems. He's got several scandals cooking in his administration. With I think his son was siphoning off money for his campaign and everything else. So Sharon's, you know, got a lot of problems in his own campaign.
He does, but it's not affecting his popularity as much as you would think.
Really?
I mean, yeah, his son, who is a Knesset member, Knesset is there, parliament. He has been indicted and he's likely to be prosecuted. To be honest, Israelis have bigger concerns than a lot of other nations. When you have, for 4 years, you had cafes blowing up every week and sometimes almost every day. People are less concerned with somebody cheating in the on their accounting forms or whatever it may well be, than they are with making sure that terrorism ends.
Yeah.
And Sharon has done that. He has killed a lot of the Palestinian bomb engineers. He has killed a lot of the Hamas leadership. Israel has won the Intifada. The second Intifada was clearly won by Israel and in large part because of Sharon. And the fact is that his son was involved, in some corrupt dealings, which Sharon may have known about, that's secondary to most Israelis.
Huh. Now, what about the Darfur region? I mean, a lot of people, the news is not covering it. I mean, is that as bad as we're being led to believe, or is it worse in Darfur?
I mean, it's, what you have there is, that's actually the one place that I would also compare to South Africa, in that you have the Arab majority dominating the black minority. The Arab minority dominating the black majority. In the Darfur region, they are black Muslims. In the south of the nation of Sudan, they are black Christians, and in both cases, they are being persecuted. Whether it's a genocide is also hard to tell because the UN is not really doing its job. They are not producing the reports that they are supposed to produce. Just like with a lot of the things that the UN is doing, it's a bloated bureaucracy that's just not performing as well as it should. Do I believe there is a genocide? Yes, I do. Do I know this for a fact? No, I do not. In the south, it's actually gotten much better just because the Christian population is better armed and it has been fighting for a long time. In the Darfur region, they are still fairly helpless and they are at the mercy of the government and the gangs that are sponsored by the government, even though the government is denying any connection to them.
Now, what about the Egyptian elections? What, Mubarak, was he just re-elected? Is that correct?
Yes, he was just re-elected, and he got almost 90%. He got 88.6%, I believe, of the vote, which is, anytime somebody tells you that they've gotten almost 90%, you got to figure that there has been election fraud. There's just no way for somebody to win that much fairly. There's just no way, especially considering that he's been in power for almost a quarter century now. So, I mean, think about how hard it is for a politician to get elected the third time. Why is that? Because if you serve long enough, there will be a lot of people that you will upset. Just by virtue of having to pass some unpopular laws that may be necessary but aren't popular. So it's hard to get elected for your 8th or 9th or 10th year in the office. For him to be reelected once again with such an overwhelming percentage, it's just very hard to believe that that's what actually happened. The interesting thing about the Egyptian elections is that only about 23% of the people voted. That's what Mubarak claims. The previous times he's claimed that anywhere between 70 to 80, 90% of the people voted. So just the fact, so it may well be that he's trying to say very few people voted, but whoever voted, voted for me. So it doesn't mean that everyone supports me, but it's just that the people who voted, voted for me. Mubarak has also been posturing to make his son his successor, which is another sign that he is a dictator, which is another sign of corruption. Having said that, his regime is not the worst regime there is. He is not anti-American. He does not sponsor terrorism. He does not, to our knowledge, build nuclear weapons. He does not threaten his neighbors. So nobody is really pushing for him to get out of the way because the Islamic Brotherhood, which is the grandfather of modern Islamic fundamentalist organizations, has begun in Egypt and they are very, very active to this day in Egypt. So a lot of people are afraid that Egypt may well fall to Islamic fundamentalists. And Mubarak, the United States is okay with him. The United States may push him here and there, but he is not the worst leader out there.
Now, what about the German elections? Now, somebody's pounding the drums about a flat tax over there in Germany.
Yes, the woman who is likely to become the next chancellor of Germany is Angela Merkel. She is 51 years old. She has a PhD in physics, but she's very conservative, at least on fiscal issues, in part because she has lived under communism in the former German Democratic Republic or East Germany. She just appointed a shadow finance minister, which is her the Christian Democrat spokesman on financial issues. And that person, Hirschkopf, he supports a flat tax of 25%. There was a German commission a few months ago, that did support the flat tax. But it's very unpopular among the German people. It is unlikely that would actually happen. In fact, after she appointed him as the shadow finance minister, her popularity went down.
Hmm.
And she may now have to organize a coalition with the Social Democrats and Schroeder. So it is if that happens, the flat tax will definitely not be established in Germany.
Amazing.
On the other hand, it is possible that would happen. And if that were to happen, it would spark a wave of flat tax reforms being passed through Western Europe. If you look at Estonia, which passed a flat tax 11 years ago, nobody really paid attention to it, but now you have 9 nations in Eastern Europe, including Russia, who have a flat tax with a very low rate. Some of them are as low as 12 or 13%.
Hmm.
If Germany were to adopt a flat tax, Western Europe would likely adopt it also, because it has worked phenomenally in the 9 nations that have adopted it.
Hmm.
Russia, for example, increased tax revenue by more than double its tax revenue within 3 years of imposing the flat tax. And so it is likely to work as well in Western Europe. And if Germany were to adopt it, much of the Western world and potentially the United States would adopt the flat tax.
Hmm.
If not now, then maybe 5, 10, 15 years from now.
Now, Dave, we only got a minute left now. Any particular words for the listeners before we let you go?
Well, I just would like to invite people to come to our website, The Global Politician. You can find it at globalpolitician.com. We have updates every day. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, David. Thank you. It's very fascinating. Thank you for the update on the world events. I mean, just thank you. I'm floored by your knowledge. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was David Starobin from theglobalpolitician.com, and it was fascinating. He did kind of, rattle on a little bit, but, I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, everything he said made sense, and a lot of news, a lot of information that we've been missing on the international scene since the Katrina mess, and that we're probably going to continue missing with the Roberts confirmation. So I thank him for being on. I mean, it was always like talking about international affairs. I know a lot of the audience probably fell asleep during that, but, I mean, it's interesting. We got the world events going around us, and we got to keep up what's going on. We got Israel. You got the events in Germany. We got the riots in Belfast, Ireland, and you got the UN and all that cooking. So we got to keep an eye on all that stuff while we're, keeping our mind on the, domestic issues. The international events affect us, like we like it or not. So, anyway, and the next hour, we'll be expecting Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica. And don't forget, next week is the big guest from Battlestar Galactica. We'll bring that person on next week. So I'm going to leave that until next week's program and bring probably the biggest guest in the history of subject to discussion with bringing on the Galactica guest. So, anyway, we'll be back in just a few minutes with the second hour. We'll bat around our subject for a discussion, which will be the UN.
Yep.
If it's worthy or not, and also maybe we'll bat around the Roberts confirmation hearings. We'll do that until Richard Hatch calls in. So which Richard Hatch? The 1-in-1 survivor? No, the actor Richard Hatch. Anyway, we'll talk to you in a few minutes. Thank you, and stay tuned.
Someone passed out.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion. It's the rat-a-tap-tap on the fingers on the keyboard here. You hear it from all over the studio at different times during the show. So anyway, welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Max, Sean Daly, call me 81, just don't call me late for dinner. That's the catchphrase. I know Diggs hates it, but that's the catchphrase of the show. Like Rush, like I said last week, talent unload from God. Right?
Yeah, you know, I forgot to make your excellence in Subject to Discussion little thing for the microphone.
The Logic and Broadcasting Network.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, affiliated with LVRocks.com. This is the LIB network, LIB.
LS2D?
No, Logic and Broadcasting Network. And we welcome back to the program. It was a nice interview with David Starobin from just a few minutes ago. It was a long interview, but it was very, very informative about the world events and everything else. We appreciate him being on. Next week, I don't have anybody set. You know, I have one person set. That's Robert Hayes from the Blogger News Network. But as I said before in the opening of the first hour, I'm having problems getting a high-profile guest. You know, Governor Richardson, he won't come on, and, you know, Dan Quayle, you know, some of the others, so I'm still working on it. So, but I do have a huge guest from Galactica is going to be on, so, but I'm looking for another big guest to, next week's the 1 year anniversary of the program, so I'm trying to, land a big guest. You know, may I bring back Saab as the,
No.
How about Debbie Hall? Let's bring
I'll
that bitch back.
I'll call the cops on Saab if he shows up.
Yeah, you'll walk if Saab comes. I'll walk if Debbie Hall comes back. There'll be nobody hosting this show. Anyway.
Well, Tom could be here.
I'll cancel it for sure. Diggs will take it off the air, won't you? Where is he? He's in the chat room. He's not answering anything. So anyway, hopefully in a few minutes we're going to have a call from Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica. We'll be talking about his career and everything. And so right now we want to bat around the John Roberts confirmation hearings, which is, which is ridiculous. All this posturing and everything. What I found fascinating, I know you want to go off on Kennedy and them, but my thing is, you know, he's gotten a high rating from the American Bar Association, you know, and I agree they should vet him out, but not like this. I mean, they're just, you know, the senators are making a fool, making asses out of themselves up there. Biden's the worst one of them all. Here he is grilling the poor guy, won't even let him get his answers out, and then he, you know, they're pulling back the tape for him with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and he even told her, you don't have to answer some of these questions and take stands on issues. I mean, what is going on?
They did a count on him. I can't remember what show I was listening to earlier today. But they inside of a half an hour, he had over 100 questions. Mm-hmm. That's just out of control. And then he kept cutting them off.
Yeah, they all did.
He wouldn't even let him talk. The one that really was making me mad was Ted Kennedy.
Oh, what?
Oh, God. Yeah. Ted Kennedy was making me mad. He's just, he'd do like a 10-minute question.
Mm-hmm.
And then Roberts would be there for about 3 seconds, start to answer it, and then Ted Kennedy would go, oh, duh, 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 and the guy that was moderating everything, he'd say, Senator Kennedy, please let him answer.
Inspector. Yeah, I mean, when then they start bickering amongst themselves, I mean, they're making them all of them look horrible in this whole thing. Yeah, that makes the whole Senate look like a bunch of crybabies, a bunch of Pollyannies, and prima donnas. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, answer the damn question. Why did they ask these 10-minute questions? You know, I was watching John Kyle, and he was blah 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 blah. I mean, I'm reading a book. I mean, ask the damn question. Let the guy answer. Why? What's with these 10-minute questions, and he only gets 1 minute to respond? You know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to find a reason not to vote for him. They're trying to give a reason for everyone not to vote for him. And I think it's just going to work out really badly for the Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get confirmed anyway because, I mean, he's gotten all these high ratings, everything else. The Republicans control the Senate. I agree with the Democrat. They should vet him out, but he's been vetted. I mean, you know, but which way of making fools themselves? And especially weeks before, they show him shaking hands and being nice to all the senators, being nice to him. Then he gets up in front of him on the hearing, and then he starts wailing on him. You know, it's ridiculous. Now, they don't know who's going to replace, now, because like you said last week, Roberts is taking the place of Rehnquist, and then they have, now, Sandra Day O'Connor has agreed to stay on until Bush finds a replacement for her, and they're saying that one's probably going to be Priscilla Owen. She's a woman, so I think she's a Hispanic woman, I believe. And so, and they said the Democrats are saving their powder for that one.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one that they're saving up for, the battle.
This is just This is just
warm-up.
Warm-up, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. I still think it's going to get approved. But these centers make such fools of themselves sitting up there. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know why these networks are all showing this wall-to-wall coverage of the same. We all know he's going to get approved. Why are they going 24-7 with this coverage anyway? It drives
it's a soap
me nuts
opera.
About the, yeah. I mean, it drives me nuts about these 24-hour news channels. Why? You know, they got all this other stuff going on. Why do you have to cover one story at a time and beat it to death?
You know, I think I actually like this one, though. Because
really?
It's showing right now, most of these senators don't need to take a half an hour. They don't need to take all this time to do all these questions.
Mm-hmm.
What they should be doing is asking him a few straightforward questions, and then see what he has to say about it.
Yeah.
They don't need to take that full half an hour. They're allotted that, but all they're doing is wasting taxpayers' money by doing it.
Yeah.
Because you would not believe how much those confirmation hearings cost.
Yeah, millions of dollars.
Millions
and then they had
millions.
To fix up that the rumor they do in the confirmation hearings out of to appease the networks. And, I mean, networks didn't want the hearings to start off in that one room because it's smaller, it's not as technologically advanced as the other rooms in the Capitol. But, you know, so they fixed it. They put, fiber optic lines in there, and they've done all kinds of work on that room just for one day. Now they moved it to another room. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, hold the hearings in the same room. Why are you costing the taxpayers more money by moving it from room to room? I mean,
Well, it's the same thing I always say on the forums. All these people, it's just a big game.
Yeah.
A lot of people look at it as a big game, and I think it's retarded to do that. We need a third party so that
Absolutely.
Those people actually just get the work done.
Yes.
And don't deal with all these hot button issues, because there's no reason to. It just wastes time and money. And whoever's got the most in the Senate or the House, whatever party has the most people in it, always gets their way.
Yeah, well, the Katrina thing. Who was I listening to today? Jerry Doyle. He's from Babylon 5. He's got a show. It's out here in Vegas. I'm trying to get him to come on, too. But it was Michael Garibaldi in Babylon 5. And he was saying, he had somebody on, I think it's Tom Tancredo, that how the Congress is trying to tack on spending bills onto the Katrina relief bills for their own area. I mean, that is horrible.
Yeah.
And I guess it was supposed to be $52 billion. Now, I guess since the Senate and the Congress have gotten their hands on it, it's gone up to $62 billion because they're all tacking on spending bills on top of the Katrina relief bill for their own districts. I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, what would these people think? These people are dying and suffering in New Orleans, and why? Oh, I need a bridge over, the B.B. King Museum needs a new, dome put on
it. The worst
something.
Part about everything is we're giving $52 billion to people that instead of trying to actually build parts to the levee or figure out how to build new parts to the levee, they were building $1 million fountains.
Yeah, $1 million fountains and shopping centers. Why are you building a shopping center on the banks of the water? I mean, I don't know. And then what else we had? The got out of the pledge. Oh yeah, the court in California ruled that the Pledge of Allegiance is unconstitutional in the California schools. Wow,
they've been really hyping that.
Yeah.
And, the big question you got to ask yourself is, are you going to actually read the information about it or not? Are you going to listen to these people that keep saying, oh, they're outlawing the Pledge of Allegiance? They're not. They're just saying that because of that one part in there that says under God, which was added in 1958 or 1950 by Eisenhower, I think it was, or someone.
Ike.
It's dumb that this little tiny section of wording is making all this big hubbub that it wasn't there to begin with. It wasn't there when it was first written. People added it, and the people that added it really were trying to kind of make it into a little bit of a theocracy and just doing it slowly.
Yeah.
I don't really like that myself, but what I would vote for is I would say, hey,
choice.
Let's just take that out.
Take that one little part out.
It was not there to begin with.
Someone else
added it.
Yeah, and take that out. I mean, we didn't have it when we first got the Pledge of Allegiance. Take it out of there. You know, Pledge of Allegiance to the 12 colonies of Cobalt. Is that what it is now?
Yeah, we're not a religious state.
No,
we don't have an actual set religion for the country. It's a big choice.
Yes.
And some people don't even consider God a god or whatever.
Yeah.
And some people just flat out don't believe in anything.
Yeah. I always had some problem. I believe there was a Jesus Christ, but I question the higher power bit. I mean, I really do. But I mean, I don't want to get into that. But I mean, it'd be a whole hour in its own. But I mean, I really do. Yeah, under God out of the Pledge of Allegiance and leave it the way it was when we first had it. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. And the same thing, these wars are all fought in the name of God. Get God out of it,
Well, the whole God issue, I think, breaks down to this. You have a football game going on,
uh-huh.
In both of the locker rooms, before they come out, both of them pray to God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think the only thing that shows is God likes one of them better than the other.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you get from that, because one of them is like, oh, we're not winning, so I guess God must not like
take
us.
It too. Yeah, I mean, it's and then they hit the thing with the ten commandments and all that stuff. So, but anyway, I just think that you know, we need another party in here to straighten out these other two. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. You know, and we need the, like I said, we had Matt Unger on from the American Centrist Party. I went through the party, I looked over, you know, and I've signed up as a member because I think we need a third party. The Reform Party is in tatters. Libertarians aren't going to go anywhere, I don't think, because they're stuck with the marijuana bit and it's hanging over their heads like a vulture. And then the American Centrist Party, I think, you know, their views are pretty much in the middle of the country. And then we need another party to shake up these other two. I mean, they'll never win the presidency or anything else, but we need a third party to at least bring up some issues to the front, like Ross Perot. I was in the Reform Party. Ross Perot brought up the debt and the deficit. You know, he made a difference. You know, Clinton and Bush, we forced them to talk about it. And Clinton did, you know, spending got under control. And Clinton was in the White House. Government spending was at the lowest it's ever been in years. So, but I think our guest is on the line.
Yes, our guest is on the line.
We'll bring on Richard Hatch. Richard Hatch, you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Hey, how you doing?
Ah, fine, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you for being on the program. I appreciate it.
No, I'm glad I made it. They actually moved a shot. I thought I was going to be in the middle of filming, and I just finished 2 minutes ago, so just in time.
Wow. So now are they filming, what, 212 right now, or you're on 213?
Yep. Well, it's 13.
Wow, okay. And so how's it going up there in Vancouver? Is it cold? You got your winter coat on yet, or what?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I don't know what it is. Maybe I bring the clouds with me, because the last time I was up here, and this was May, June, it was freezing cold, rainy, and I thought, you know, where is the summer in Vancouver? and then I leave, and then the sun comes out for 31 straight days, and then when I return, the clouds come back.
I don't know what that means. I don't know.
I'm worried.
Don't worry about it.
Richard Rainmaker Hatch.
Yeah, call you Rainmaker. How about that?
Yeah, well, you know, in some places that's a good thing.
So now, what we've been up to, I know you're doing Tom Zarek. How do you like that character?
I love this character.
Really?
I mean, these kinds of shows where they write these kind of very interesting, multi-leveled, multi-layered, conflicted characters that are struggling with their good and bad side. I mean, that's who we all are, you know. Mm-hmm. Some of us are lean a little bit more to the left or the right, but most of us are struggling to deal with life's challenges, and sometimes it pushes us off the cliff, and sometimes we never make it back up the hill, and I think that's life, and it explores the morality of human beings and what is possible in this world. And I think Tom Zarek is like so many idealistic human beings. He's somebody who's lost his way and paid a big price for his idealism and ended up in prison for 20 years, and I think he fought the good fight, and I think he had some good ideas, but like a lot of good men who maybe go bad, he got wounded and damaged in many, many ways, and he's struggling to make his way back, which is, for me, is a very heroic character. I mean, I like this character. He's very real, very human, and at the same time, extremely flawed and has a dark side.
Yeah. Now, you're filming the second 10. How many episodes is Tom Zarek going to be in the second 10?
I really don't know.
No?
I mean, this is the first one I filmed in the second 10, and to tell you the truth, I didn't even know it was coming up until about a week ago.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's very good. Now, a lot of people refer, you know, when Tom Zarek first showed up, he's kind of like a lot of people refer to him as like the JR of Battlestar Galactica. I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean,
hey, that's okay. I like it. You know, I love the art of acting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I look at it as an art. I know it's a business as well, but for me, all my life, I have lived to play interesting, very complex, very, flawed characters, because I honestly think that we as human beings are flawed and imperfect, and yet somehow, you know, we're always struggling with that good and bad inside of all of us, and I love playing characters that explore that honestly. And so often when you play a leading man, especially maybe 10, 15 years ago, they tended to be a little bit more cliche, a little bit more good or bad. You know, the good guy was a good guy, the bad guy was a bad guy. And now, for me, I get to play really diverse, interesting characters. I've always been a character actor, and I never considered myself a leading man actor. I just find the character actor gets a chance to do far more interesting types of human beings, and maybe human beings that we can all relate to.
That's true. I mean, it's, I think it's why the series is so popular, that people can relate to all the characters.
Well, I think, you know, on this show, I mean, you have a diverse set of characters, there's a large cast, and yet, you know, nobody is all good or all bad. I mean, every one of these characters has got a dark side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's life, that's humanity, and also the journey of the hero. I think the truly heroic human being is the one who doesn't stay perfect. It's the one who's been pushed off the cliff because of life's challenges, because of circumstances. God knows all the things that happen to all of us that sometimes turn us to that, you know, angry, painful place. And some people, you know, become killers, murderers. Some people go to prison. Some people make their way back from the dark side to become, you know, teachers and leaders. And I honestly think that journey back home, I call it the journey of redemption, is a very heroic struggle. And I love that in this show, that they explore that in many different ways with many different characters. This show is about life, and it's not afraid to go where most shows have never gone before.
Yeah, now comparing that to, like, people are asking about your about the Great War of Magellan. Now, how do you compare the two shows? Is it completely different?
Yeah, well, you have to understand that, you know, science fiction, I shouldn't say science fiction is science fiction. I mean, science fiction covers a wide, wide area, wide topography, literary topography. But I think all great shows explore morality, explore the sociological, philosophical, spiritual, political agendas, issues of our day, and try to bring light or insight into those areas. And I think all great dramas do that. They do it in different ways with different sets of characters. And obviously these different sets of characters have a different kind of chemistry between them, which is what makes each show unique.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Magellan, you know, is a show that takes place in the Magellanic Cloud. These are two of the closest galaxies to ours. And I explore a root race of human beings that have been struggling for several evolutions of time, trying to overcome mankind's penchant for war and destruction. Somehow, what I found an interesting theme was the fact that no matter how many civilizations have risen, all those civilizations found a way at some point to self-destruct. We somehow just keep coming back to war.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems something that's either inbred in civilization or something that somehow, some way, we developed over time, because and the key is, will we ever overcome it so that we can move beyond war and self-destruction to a higher pinnacle of achievement? And I explore that in Magellan. Except that the only difference is, in Magellan, I explore the fact that our ancient forefathers had found a way to move beyond war and self-destruction, and somehow, after they left, succeeding generations of humankind fell into patterns of entropy, war, destruction, greed, and slowly but surely we moved down the spiral. And so somehow, some way, we forgot. We lost something that we once knew that led us on this downward spiral into war, destruction, poverty, disease, all the things we see in the world. And the key is, can we make it back? Can we move back to an upward spiral so that we can move beyond these negative patterns that seem to keep society moving in the wrong direction? And I explore that in Magellan through an ancient star mariner named Achillean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very different story, and yet, obviously, I'm going to explore, you know, I think very profound moral themes, sociological themes about who we are as human beings, what makes us tick, where we've come from, where we're going, what's out there. I mean, I love exploring the mysteries of the universe and the mysteries of the human heart, and all great science fiction does that.
Well, what's the latest on that project? I know you have the trailer up on your website, which is richardhatch.com. It's a wonderful project, and the comic books are out, correct?
Well, the comic book will really get more, much more. We have three graphic novels coming out.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be an online teaser comic coming out in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's going to be 3 or 4 weeks, but once that comes out, then we're going to have the first graphic novel, which is 72 pages, and that will get you much more in-depth into the story. And obviously, I just made a novel deal, so we're going to be writing the first Magellan novel with my co-writer from the Battlestar novels, and that one will be coming out later this year, and that will really get into the history and the backstory of what Magellan is all about, the Great War of Magellan, and there's a lot of mythology in it. It explores some very profound, provocative issues about, you know, the world, about the universe. It combines, I think, great heart with really the exploration of theoretical probabilities and possibilities that basically we're facing today on the threshold of going into space. I mean, there's so many issues to be explored, and science fiction has an opportunity to, again, go into those areas that most, I think, drama is afraid to even touch.
True.
And I've always been a man that loves bringing, you know, the mysteries of the universe and bringing that together with exploring the mysteries of who we are as human beings and what makes us tick and why are we the way we are and exploring the mystery of relationships.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, between people. I mean, all of that creates great drama.
Yeah.
But in life and death circumstances, such as Battlestar Galactica, and also the Great War of Magellan, it deals in an apocalyptic universe where mankind continually moves down the spiral to where it may ultimately one day terminate itself. And as we look at this society, I mean, we're reaching a very powerful point in our history where we will either find a way to grow up as human beings, emotionally, philosophically, spiritually, so that we can handle the incredible power that is being unleashed through science. The key is, I wonder, will we make it? And the key is, we're looking around us now, and we see it wouldn't take much for any individual to ignite an atomic bomb, to blow up half the world. I mean, anything and everything could happen, and yet will we find a way to pull back from the brink and move on as a species? And I love that issue, and we explore that in Great War Magellan, and I think Battlestar in a whole other way explores, you know, here's this, what is left of the human race, traveling through space, searching for a new homeland with life and death at every turn, and having to deal with our sense of mortality, our sense of humanity, and where we're going to go as a race. I just love those issues. Again, Battlestar is a totally different universe from mine, but I will be exploring, obviously, some very similar themes, but in different ways. I think this Battlestar is much more down-to-earth, very grounded, very real, and very dark, and I love that, to tell you the truth. I fought for that 25 years ago, and I love what Ron Moore and the writers and this show is doing with Battlestar. Obviously, having been an original actor, it would have been great to do this with a continuation, which would have been my dream, but without obviously going in that direction, I think everything they've done with this show is phenomenal, and they've done an extraordinary job of creating such a dynamic, interesting show in such a short amount of time. I'm blown away by that. But I honestly love any kind of science fiction or drama that goes into these same provocative areas with honesty, gut-level honesty, which is what these writers are doing.
Now, are you surprised at the popularity of the new series? I mean, you know.
No, because I tell you something. I think the Battlestar Galactica theme, I swear, not just me, but thousands of fans all over the country have always known what the studios were the last to get, which is this epic theme, like Moses and the Israelites, you know, this powerful theme that Battlestar really encompasses of, you know, truly being cast out of your homeland, searching through the deserts of space for your sense of identity, having to face your own mortality, your own sense of who you are, your identity as a human species, having to redefine yourself, having to somehow pull together all these diverse cultural groups of individuals who have probably warred against each other, you know, hated each other, different religious backgrounds, and yet somehow having to find a way to pull together as one race, survive long enough through the incredible challenges of space to find a new homeland and restart humanity. I mean, that is such a powerful theme that I think anybody on any level can relate to metaphorically.
Yeah.
I mean, we all leave our home at some point as children, as young adults, and then we, you know, search in the world for our sense of identity to find out who we are. We learn, we grow, we fall down, and then ultimately we find a new place, a job, a home, a wife, start a new family. In a sense, metaphorically speaking, it's similar but different. Battlestar is an expanded, more larger picture of that same kind of epic journey that we're all on. But I mean, I think it's something everybody can identify with, And how, think of a show that's 25 years old, 27 years old, that had the popularity of Battlestar, having only been on 24 hours of real programming. And here, 27 years later, there's several companies already creating new products, toys, games, books. And that was before the new show came out. And now that the new show has come out, it's just building upon that legacy. I mean, it's taking that central theme and going into it in a deeper, more profound way, because we couldn't do that 25 years ago.
Yeah, it's amazing the popularity of the show. I mean, you know, it's come out of nowhere. I mean, and then The Second Coming. Now, do you think a movie of the continuation of the original series can survive while the new show is on the air?
Can do what now? I'm sorry.
Oh, can a continuation of the classic series, you know, be possible while the new series is on the air?
Well, you know something? I mean, first of all, I don't think that's going to happen, only because I think Universal is fully committed to the new show, and they have every right to be. But, you know, I think that just like Star Trek, they did Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. You know, they did so many other shows within the Star Trek universe that I think that if they wanted to, they certainly could do something like that. They could do a movie series. Obviously, if they did a movie, it would be probably only several of the original cast members, and then they would have a new generation of our children born in space who are the same ages as we were 25 years ago. Obviously, it would add new characters, and so it would be a compilation of what happened before and where it would go today with today's technology and our ability to write and explore much deeper issues and get into the central core theme of Battlestar. I think, obviously, any continuation would do that, and I think I heard Tom DeSanto, who produced X-Men, is talking to Glenn Larson, who may have the rights to the movies, and whether it's a movie or a animated movie, I think they could very well do a continuation of that and maybe do some kind of series in that format. I don't think one would conflict with the other. I just think that Battlestar is such a powerful story that I think you could have fans loving both. In fact, you do. Fans love both shows for different reasons, but I think if you're a Battlestar fan, I think you can love both of these shows. They're just incredibly well acted, well written, each for their own time, and obviously there's assets and liabilities to every show, and I just think that these shows obviously are different in some ways, but it's still exploring that epic journey, that powerful journey that somehow, some way, I think we can all relate to.
Now, do you have when you first came onto the new show, did you have a hard time looking at Olmos as Adama and not think of Lauren Green?
No. Well, when the show first came out, it was very hard for me. The first 4 hours was very difficult because, remember, I had worked very hard to bring back the original, and I had built a web page and written novels and created a Second Coming trailer, met with Universal many, many times, Sony, so many companies. This is way before this new show got put together, and Tom DeSanto was doing much of the same thing. He was exploring the rights issue, looking for ways to bring back the show, and I think when we first saw the 4 hours, it was so different, and also, remember, they weren't in space.
Mm-hmm.
They were still on the ground, so obviously they were covering different territory, so the show looked so different. It was hard to relate to the show because of the characters and the plot and the situation being so different from the original. But I think once they got into space, the show really got much more into the core of what Battlestar used to be and was and is, that it then got much easier to connect the dots between the two shows, and it got much easier to get into the new show for those who love the original. I think they could begin to relate to the stories and to the character relationships. But the first 4 hours for me was hard, but when it got into the series, I think the show also took a big quantum step forward. I love the music, the pacing, the rhythm, the energy of the show really started to kick in the episodes. But again, I'd have to go back and look at the 4 hours now that I'm into the show, and I'd probably be able to appreciate it in a different way, because I wouldn't be comparing it to the original, which is what a lot of people did. You can't compare the two shows without doing an injustice to both shows.
Yeah, I mean,
you have to love each show for different reasons, and it makes no sense to compare two shows done so differently and at such different time frames.
Yeah, because basically pretty much all they have in common is the name of the series. The name is all they have in common.
Right.
Correct. And it's in the character names, but I mean, other than that, it's two different shows. Now,
two different versions, ways of doing this premise.
Mm-hmm.
And And I think Edward Olmos is an incredible actor.
Mm-hmm.
Mary McDonnell, who plays the president, is an incredible actress. And you've got a wonderful continuum. I mean, there's some amazing actors on this show. Plus, I have to tell you, working on this show, they're extraordinary human beings. And I can't say that about every show I've been on, but I love who these people are as human beings. Mm-hmm. They're very humble, have tremendous humility, and yet they care about the craft, the art of acting. They don't just go there to look good. They really go there to give their heart, their soul, to mm-hmm. make it the best it can be. And I tell you something, I live to be part of that kind of creative energy and passion and life. And, I mean, I'm one of those, maybe I'm a energy junkie, but I love when people have the courage to jump off the cliff and risk it all. And I think Ron Moore and company, you know, he didn't apologize or, you know, rightly or wrongly, for better or for worse, whether you agreed or disagreed, he committed to his vision with everything he had. And he brought out a show that was very different, and yet incredibly well-crafted and well-produced and well-acted and written.
Yeah,
so,
I mean
you can, like I say, you can sit there and judge and be critical and find fault with anything, but I just think that, my God, there's so much right about this show that even those who love the original show, I think that they can appreciate this show, and yet they don't have to feel like they're betraying the original show. Honestly, I mean, the other one was done 27 years ago. It's a new time frame. It's a new day. And obviously, it would have been lovely to do a continuation. I mean, obviously, a lot of us would have loved to have seen that first. But, you know, for me, after they did that, had they done a spinoff, it would have been great to see a new version. They could have even done the Pegasus story. But the point is, they didn't do that. But what they did do was absolutely extraordinary. I think you have to look at what was done and not what wasn't done.
Yeah, now, well, I have actually a question from the chat room. They're asking, how'd you feel about the various change in gender of a couple of the characters, you know, Starbuck and Boomer? I mean, how'd you...
You know something? I wonder if I can do this. Do you take a commercial break so I can just run up to my room? They're just going to drop me off here at the hotel.
Oh, okay.
And I can run up and get on the regular phone and finish this.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Want to do that?
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll be right back.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
And we'll be joined by Richard Hatch in just a few minutes as he runs up to his hotel. I appreciate the effort they all make to be on the program. I mean, Katie, you know, one time had to, you know, bribe the cab driver to get her to her home in L.A., you know, to be on the program. So I appreciate the effort, you know. For the first time she was on, of course, that was the one that we lost.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Aaron Douglas calling in from the convention. Richard Hatch, I didn't know he was, I thought he was on the set. I guess he was being driven home or something, driven to his hotel.
When I answered the phone, he said he was, in the midst of driving on a cell phone.
Wow.
So that's where all the little bit of movement should be coming from on the sound.
I thought he was on the ship. Was he on the Galactica?
Oh, yeah.
Make the noise like the ship. So anyway, he'll be calling back in just a moment or so. But, I mean, he's done a great job. You know, I'm going to ask him more about his career once we get going, because, like I said, he's been in almost every key series in the last 30 years. I mean, you know, Mary Hartman is on that. Forever Fernwood, remember that with Martin Mull and what's his name? The Streets of San Francisco with Carl Malden, you know, the guy with the big nose from the American Express commercials. MacGyver.
Yeah, and what was that one we were looking at? Charlie Chan.
He was number one son.
Number one son.
Charlie Chan. Now that was the first and only movie they made of that. But
yep.
and he was on, of course, Battlestar Galactica. All My Children. He was on All My Children. I want to ask him about that. Baywatch, Jake and the Fat Man. He was on it with William Conrad. He was also on an episode, Cannon, too. And Cannon was the old show with William Conrad, the old detective show by Quinn Martin Productions. Yeah, they're all the ones that did Barnaby Jones and Mannix and all those other shows. And he was in Hotel. I wonder if that was a hotel that when Betty Davis was doing it or when the other one took over, the other actress took over and Betty Davis died. And MacGyver, Love Boat, he was on Love Boat. We got MacGyver, he was on T.J. Hooker, you know, Dynasty.
Oh,
I thought it was a train. I'm like, damn, that's noisy today. Oh, there you go. and it was on Dynasty, T.J. Hooker with Shatner. So that's a connection there.
Right,
there we go.
There he is.
And I think we're rejoined by Richard Hatch.
Yep, I'm back.
Wow, that was quick. Must be staying at the Holiday Inn or something, huh?
No. Oh. I was just getting out, ran up the elevator, and into my room.
Hi. And then, like I said, we had a question about how'd you feel about the gender recast of the characters from, you know, Starbucks a woman and Boomer's a woman?
You know something? Unlike some people who were upset about a lot of things, those things didn't upset me at all. I think the big thing for me was nothing to do with this show. I was not upset at this show. I was upset only because I so badly wanted the original show to be updated, obviously evolved, the concepts brought forward 25, 26, 27 years so that we could build a bridge between the original show and where the show might be today. That was my heart's desire. So when that wasn't done, then obviously that disappointment was very painful for me, and I had to deal with that. When the new show came out, for me, it was such a different version of it and so reimagined that, honestly, I didn't compare it with the original. I just kind of looked at it and saw it for what it was. And, yeah, the first 4 hours I did do a little bit of comparing because I think all of us couldn't help but do that. But I think once the show got into the episodes, I just began to look at it for what it is, and I stopped comparing it, and I really just basically enjoyed it as a sci-fi fan. I love wonderful, intelligent, visionary science fiction. I mean, I cannot get enough of that. I mean, I'm a true science fiction fantasy lover, and Battlestar was so well written and so well acted that it was hard not to like and get involved with. And again, because these characters were so different in many ways, and also because, you know, in this show they didn't, their names are not Starbuck, Apollo. Their call signs are Starbuck and Apollo. So their names are, you know, her name is Kara, and Apollo's name is Lee Adama. And so in a sense they have different names, and they're really their own unique character, although there are some similar traits between Starbuck and Apollo. But I honestly think they've made these characters so uniquely their own that, again, at this point in time, I don't think you can compare them anymore. And I also think it was smart just for the fact that if you had cast a man as Starbuck, you would have really compared the original Starbuck with the new Starbuck. And in this way, you couldn't really compare them. You basically had to accept her on her own terms. And I honestly have to tell you, I mean, I love the original Starbuck and the way it was played by Dirk Benedict, and you can't ever, ever try to compare with that. But I honestly think Katie has created such a phenomenal, interesting, complex, unique character. I mean, I think she's an extraordinary young actress. And also, I mean, I'm not just saying this to say nice words. I you know, I lecture and do acting symposiums all over the place, colleges, universities, and I really admire wonderful artistry. And I feel the same way with Jamie Bamber. He brings such a honesty and integrity and inner sense of strength to Apollo, even though he's a very different Apollo. I mean, I think he's going in really, really interesting places with it. And I think the writers are also taking his character in interesting places. They're forcing these characters to reevaluate their point of view. Life pushes us all up against the wall, makes us all reevaluate our sense of morality, our sense of what justice is, maybe looking at the world not in terms of black or white. Maybe there are some gray areas. Maybe we all have to get to the middle someday, you know?
Absolutely. As I was saying earlier in the show, we're talking about the politicians in Washington beating each other up over the Supreme Court nomination. I mean, where'd you get your common sense perspective? I mean, it's wonderful.
Well, you have to understand something. I've suffered a lot in my life. Maybe all artists suffer because of the choice of going into an industry where there's the ground shakes. There's no stability outside. You really have to find it inside. And I think, you know, a lot of times you end up doing drugs and alcohol trying to deal with all the rejection and the ups and downs of a career. But I think you can also find maybe a deeper inner truth. And I kind of went more the spiritual path. I was always, you know, praying for, what's the word, revelation, looking to understand life in a deeper way. And I read all those books and went to all those seminars and tried to find a way to you know, get myself grounded and in balance. Because I'm telling you, it's, you know, I had as many flaws as anybody ever had, and having to deal with the ups and downs of this industry is, honestly, it's enough to knock the wind out of you, so enough to knock the life out of you. And yet, I find this journey, the journey of the artist, is a very heroic journey. It takes a lot of guts, and yet without the artistry in this world, I don't think this world would be a place anybody would want to live.
That's true. I mean,
you know.
Now, your career, I mean, do you look back and think, my God, you've done so much? I mean, Streets of San Francisco with Carl Malden, and he did, and I talked about All My Children. I mean, you're on that. I mean, are you just floored? I mean, look back at your career and go, wow,
Well, I did so many different things. I mean, when I look back, it blows me away because you do each of those things one by one, and you mm-hmm. forget they all add up, The years go by very, very quickly, but I honestly never even dreamt that I would ever be on television or somebody would even know my name. Mm-hmm. I went into acting because I was one of the shyest, and this is maybe a story you've heard before, but I was incredibly shy, emotionally insecure, had multiple stepfathers that did not love me, and were probably on some level emotionally, psychologically abusive. And I got to tell you, I was searching for a way out. So I needed help, which started me, obviously reading every book I could on religion, on spirituality, trying to learn more about God, trying to learn about more about the universe. I studied physics, quantum physics. I went to seminars, workshops, and then I found this acting workshop somebody sent me to, and the sign on the door said, "No acting, please." And I thought, how interesting. And I found out that the acting workshop was really about getting through all the stuff that separates us from who we are, all the fears, insecurities, getting in touch with our gut, our heart, our soul, our spirit, and learning how to be honest with ourselves. And then from that very grounded, honest place, then making creative decisions using our imagination to then explore hypothetical circumstances that allowed us to create characters. So first and foremost, it wasn't about faking it or pretending or being a good liar. It was actually about being more honest than I'd ever been in my life. And acting is honesty, except that you're dealing with hypothetical circumstances, as opposed to ones that are existing in your life at the present moment. So acting became a journey for me of healing. Art is a healing process. It became a journey of revelation, lots of epiphanies about life. You step in other people's shoes, look through their eyes, and see what life is like, from the bottom of life, from the top of life. Every character you play gives you new insights into who anybody is. You can't help but develop compassion, understanding, empathy, forgiveness when you've played a lot of characters and started to see life from all those different points of view.
Now, is there a perfect role for you to play? I mean, you look out there, you're playing Tom Zarek, but is there the role you want to play?
I always wanted to do Peer Gynt, was one of the plays I wanted to do really, really bad. They say all actors would love to play Hamlet, but, I love to play rich, fully dimensional characters that are human, flawed, imperfect, and yet somehow struggling to come to terms with all of that and find the light. I think deep down inside all of us, no matter how dark we get, we're searching for that point of light that can lead us home. And I think the struggle, whether we make it or not, sometimes we don't make it. Some characters don't make it at all. Is that is a dramatic struggle. That is an epic struggle, and I think it's played out in many different screenplays, many different dramas that we see. Even comedy comes from premises like that. Those are the characters that move me. I mean, artistry is, again, it's about life and anything that allows me to explore life in a more powerful way. I have grown so much through acting and performing. I've learned so much about people. Every scene I ever rehearsed, all those scenes with all those, different people that you go spend weeks getting to know, learning how to move through all your walls, your insecurities, learning how to communicate. I mean, when you work on a scene, you do all these exercises. People don't understand that we as actors have to learn to get to a very deep, profound place of vulnerability, bringing down the walls. Those boundaries that most people have, actors have to bring down when they're acting so that they can jump into any role, any circumstance, and connect with any emotion necessary and not do it, 2 days from now, but to do it now. And you have to really get this instrument, we call it our instrument, to such a fine tune that we can go anywhere, do anything by making choices and decisions about what we choose to believe is true. And I find it a great metaphor for life, because we make choices all the time in life that we live out, because whatever we choose to believe is true in our life, we make true by our belief in it, by our judgments. So I find acting as a powerful metaphor. It's a mirror to life, and I think that great drama can not only entertain, but educate, inspire, uplift. And I think life feeds drama, life feeds art, art feeds life.
Now, Richard Hatch, we're almost out of time for the show. Do you have any final words for the fans? I mean, it's been a really enlightening interview. I thank you very much.
You're
so fascinating.
Great. Well, I think we all share what we've learned the hard way. I teach and lecture all over the country as a professional hobby of mine. I go to colleges, universities, high schools. I teach these three-day seminars, boot camps. I teach on so many different subjects, moving from fear to self-mastery. I do acting from the heart. I do acting symposiums. I do unleashing your power and creative vision, learning how to really get in touch with who you are, what you really want to do in this world, and how to take the steps to get out there and do it. And then I write novels and books, and I'm writing comic books now for Magellan, and I'm developing a new sci-fi series that I'm putting my heart and soul into. And I'm, like I say, I act, write, direct, produce, teach, lecture. And for me, everybody says, isn't that a lot? Aren't you kind of burning the candle at both ends? And I say, no, because all of those facets, all those things are facets of my personality, and they all come from the same place. They all feed each other. They support each other. The acting supports the directing, the writing, the directing, and the acting. It all works synergistically together. So I can't imagine not doing any of those things.
Actually, Mr. Hatch, I have a question from the producer.
Richard, this is Mark. When are you getting back on your lecture circuit and your appearances and everything?
I believe it or not, I go into a lot of times I get asked to come to do sci-fi conventions. And at the sci-fi conventions, I'll do an Acting from the Heart seminar. I'll do Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Show Business seminar. Sometimes a college in the area will ask me to come over and do something for their acting theater program. And then every once in a while, I'll go do a three-day, four-day. I've done what I call acting boot camps. We go up in the mountains, go to some great place. You still there?
Yes.
Oh, we spend 3 or 4 days in some beautiful place going through the journey of what acting is and getting to a deeper level of our talent. I do four-day camps on success, and I do them periodically, and I usually list them up on my websites. You can go to richardhatch.com, although that site is being rebuilt. So if you wait like about a month, I think you'll have a new Richard Hatch site up there.
Cool.
And you can contact me. And anyway, everything for me, art, life, everything I do for me is to bring inspiration into the world because we need it. And obviously, I'm not about goody-two-shoes or candy coating. You got to get into the nitty-gritty. But, you know, every great drama, every show, every book, every novel, for me, there's a point of light, even in the deepest darkness. And I think that's what great art explores, is the path out of the deepest darkness. And great drama, great pathos, great humor comes from all of that. And I live for that. I live to see the light come on in the audience's eyes when you blow them away with something that moves them out of the theater, out of the movie house, and you've changed their life forever. You know, the right word, the right metaphor, the right image at the right time can change somebody's life forever.
Well, Mr. Hatch, I appreciate being on. Thank you. It was wonderful talking to you. I mean, it was very enlightening.
Thank you so much.
And I appreciate going through the effort to be on the program. I really do.
You're welcome. And, guys, look forward to seeing all of you anywhere we travel in the country. And check out Battlestar. Check out BattlestarGalactica.com. And link over to our new Great War of Magellan site. You can check out all the new stuff on that as well.
Absolutely.
I want to check that out.
Absolutely.
That sounded really interesting.
All right.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Night.
You too. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
And that was Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica, Great War of Magellan, and everything else he's involved in. Wow. That was a very interesting interview.
We actually have another phone call.
Oh, we do? Okay. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, Koenig Rules. There you go.
Hi. How's it going?
Fine. That was a wonderful interview by with Richard Hatch. I mean, that was terrific. I mean, a lot of the fans are beating up on me because I wasn't, you know, able to get questions. But, you know, let the man talk, for Christ's sake, you know?
Right. Right.
Right. So, what, you have some big news about a season?
Yeah. I checked with my sci-fi sources. And,
spoilers.
It looks like Galactica is on for season 3.
Oh, well, that was kind of a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, I know that on some of the sites they've indicated that it's taken a hit
in
the ratings this year, but Atlantis and SG-1 have taken some hits, too. too, but they're very supportive of the show.
Yeah.
I couldn't get any information yet on the number of episodes,
but
it's definitely
a go
for next year, and it looks like Ron Moore is already talking about season 3 stories.
Yeah, I saw that, and you haven't gotten clearance to reveal the death yet, have you?
No. I don't want to get individuals in trouble, but it's going to be a killer.
Uh-oh. And you said it was a former guest of Subject to Discussion, right?
Yeah. So I know you
I wonder who.
A former guest.
Yeah, how many times was this former guest on my program?
I'm not going to tell you, John, because you can do it by a process.
Yeah, hello. Oh, there he goes. Who got killed off?
This would be terrible if Hatch now gets it.
No.
Start a rumor, right?
Well, maybe he could. He could go off and do his other projects.
Oh, well, maybe next week's guest.
What's going on for next week?
Oh, I have the biggest guest in the history of Subject to Discussion coming on next week. The huge guest.
DJO?
I can't reveal until this person's on the program. I've been sworn to secrecy. Who it is? You'll be shocked.
It's a Galactica guest, right?
It's a Galactica guest, absolutely. But because next week's the big 1 year anniversary of the program, so I have to bring it out in big style here. Can't get the damn governor from New Mexico to come on, or Clinton, or Quayle, any of these politicians. But I got the damn the biggest star in the history of Galactica coming on next week, so should be huge. So
that's great.
Yes.
Well, I will be tuning in, but I just wanted to let the guys know, and you don't worry about a season 3. It's in the bag.
All right. Well, thank you, Koenig. We have to let you go. We're almost out of time.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. And like I said, next week is the big 1 year anniversary. I'm not going to do anything with the anniversary. Anyway, we'll give a tour of the studio of LV Rocks. People are asking me for a tour next week, so maybe we'll do that. And I have Robert Hayes coming on. He's the editor of the Blogger News Network. And then the biggest star in the history of Galactica will be on next week as well. So we look forward to that. Thank you to Richard Hatch for being on. Thank you to David Starobin from GlobalPolitician.com for being on. And next is Wild Women in Vegas. Tomorrow morning from 10 till 12 at Pacific is Daily Noise. Spank Wagon is on Friday, so is King Hash. Tap Out is on Sunday from 8 o'clock. And good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.